This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by you. That is right, you. All of your Patreon donations, PayPal donations, five-star reviews on Apple and Stitcher, shout-outs on social media, articles, mentions to your friends, I Hate You merchandise purchases all make this show possible week in and week out. And for that, we thank you very much, homies. This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. Let us drop the intro. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating. From the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho who lives in New York City, whose pronouns are she and her, who's double cheaped up and double masked up on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afternoon, and who, though it looks like her hair is done under this hat, the majority of it is not.
And me, Akua, pronouns she and her. I didn't think of an intro, so I guess I'm just your friendly demisexual mental health professional who shakes her ass on a Wednesday.
I love all of those things. That was such a great intro. I like that it started with friendly. I knew it was going to be warm, inviting, and just good stuff. Every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. And sometimes those topics are suggested. This episode, we're talking all about raising a special needs child. Everything from finding the balance between self and parenting to sex education for the kid. What does that look like this day and age? It's TikTok. And they be talking about sex on there. What do you do?
Ooh,
all that and more coming up.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation we have on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag pod in so other people can see it. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inner Ho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook, that's with the G. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Ho Uprising Community. That is C-U-M-M-U-N-I-T-Y. You got to sing it as you type it, too. And you can head over to innerhouprising.com to pay a ho.
If you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, Black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics we discuss on this here show, or to have us host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Now for our first segment of the day, and it is my favorite intro, really.
Grandma! Yeah. Are you a hoe?
Just can't wait to have the little one say that to me.
Honestly. Literally. I am waiting for grandparenthood. It's
the most lit of the hoods, I think.
It's the most lit of the hoods. They are just so carefree. They don't give a fuck. We ain't caring for nobody nor responsible for nobody. The grandparents just be out here.
Oh, yeah.
Unfiltered. Yeah. I'm ready. And I can't wait.
Definitely working on getting some elders on the show, by the way. So if you have an elder who's very open about their sex, love, and dating life, whether past or present, let us know. Because I would like to talk to them.
I want to speak with them.
Yes. So this is Ho of the Week. It is the segment where we shout out the homies who have supported IHU in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. So this week, we got Sonia F, a.k.a. I Sonia, who paid a ho via PayPal. We got Nico D, a.k.a. Nikki the D, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Casey Q, a.k.a. Jolof, who became a patron on Patreon. And I'm going to actually just say it because this is a personal request that Akua did not see. I see the back end of Patreon. Casey has requested for Akua to make jollof rice for them.
For them? Of course, Casey.
After you so enticingly mentioned it on our previous episode. So, and you know what, Akua? I'm waiting too, because the chicken wings are all good and the mac and cheese and all of the other things that Akua has made. But I want jollof now.
I will. Oblige, no worries.
Thank you. We got Tanya B, aka I Tanya. Oh, I'm sorry, I Robot, actually, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Natural Curl Beauty, whose name is Natural Curl Beauty now, and they became a patron on Patreon. We also got Marley, whose nickname is Marley and Memes, which I really, really like. But Marley sent us these lovely herbal salves and soaps that smell and feel so good. Who has not received hers yet? Because I haven't gone to the post office yet, but one day I will. Or no, I'll just bring it to you, actually. But the other hosts have not received it yet, but I tried the salve, which is called Sweet, Dank, and Delicious.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And it smells sweet, dank, and delicious. And it feels so good on my back that hurts often.
Thank you, Marley.
Yeah, that was so sweet. Thank you, Marley. We also have Lily Barrett, Angie NYC, and Cook It On Low! Exclamation point, who all reviewed us on Apple Podcast.
I'm sorry, Cook It On Low felt like a personal attack because my stove burner be too dead damn on high,
bitch.
It be on high all the time, so that felt like a personal attack, especially with the exclamation
that
point.
That was don't a personal attack.
Don't be yelling at me. I don't want it on medium, high, or low. It cook faster when it's on high. I don't got time to wait.
Cook it on low. Oh, man. Okay. Thank you all for reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. I do want to take this time to give a reminder because sometimes folks in the reviews have it a little bit wrong. This podcast is hosted by one non-binary person and three women in the past, from 2015 to the beginning of 2016. It was hosted by two women, myself and my previous co-host, but that is no longer the case. So when you're leaving reviews, please keep that in mind, that we do not collectively go by terms like ladies or women. And if you would like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname of your own, here are some things that you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can feature us in an article you've written or shout us out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways that you can support us, and we really, really appreciate these non-monetary means of support. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand in these uncertain times that monetary support is not feasible for many folks. So please, this is an order. Do not spend your last dollars on us, or even your second to last dollars on us.
A whole mandate.
Yeah, that's a mandate.
It's not a request.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
When the stimmy hits, don't think about it.
Get your crab legs, son. Pay your bills. Put a little bit in your savings. Invest or whatever if that's your bag. Get your crab legs. Donate to the mutual aid funds. Mm-hmm. Get your crown royal. And then give a little bit to Inner Ho Uprising. That's the chain of life.
Yes, that's
right
the
there.
Order.
Yes. but if you can spare some change at the end of that order, you can donate to us on PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. The links to both of which are in the show notes. And also, as a reminder, if you do become a patron on Patreon, for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron only film nights, where sometimes we watch riveting stuff and sometimes we watch ridiculous stuff, and it's always fun. And for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any Patreon tier, you can receive access to our episodes a few days early, entry to our workshops and parties, and entry to our pre-episode chats, which are always so fun, and everybody on there is so knowledgeable about stuff. Today we learned, like, you think you know astrology, you have no idea. Like, that's mm-hmm. what today was. I had no idea. So that was a really fun conversation, and it's always great to see everyone's lovely faces. Yeah, that's enough of the spiels. We're going to get into the topic of the day now, and we're going to play some topic of the day music. Usually it is Cull Hours by Amari Simone, which is a great song, but because this is a Akua-centric episode, I do have to play Akua's favorite song.
Oh, I hate you guys.
Oh, man. So if you're new to this show, many of our listeners think that at the beginning of this little music bump, Choti Ma is saying, "I'm a coup." And people also thought that this was Akua singing. So that's why this is Akua's favorite song. It's just so funny to me. Niggas thought you were just jamming on every podcaster, mental health professional, and sanger, bitch. Like, get out of here.
Love, love, love. our audience, because y'all are some funny motherfuckers, and we appreciate it. It will forever. If I pass away before everyone else, Samantha, please play it at my funeral. Request it. You know, write it. Let them know.
If you die before me, we getting Chotima. No, we getting fucking Chotima and Beyonce there somehow. I don't know how, and they're gonna do a cover of it together, bitch. You're not dying before me because I don't have the money to do that, Akua. Okay. All right. So we are getting to our segment called Fuck It. It is our topic of the day, and this is our deep dive segment. And today we're doing a deep dive. This episode idea today was pitched by Shanae. Shanae's pronouns are she and her. She is at @anti_social_moth on Instagram. So thank you so much, Shanae, for suggesting this episode idea. And Shanae wrote in and wrote, "Hello, I hope you're doing well." This was directly to Akua. I'm not sure if this could be included as an episode. However, have you ever shared your story about having a special needs child at a young age? If you have, could you direct me to that episode? Here it is, Shanae. We're making it for you. I had my daughter at 17 and she has cerebral palsy, just like Dave, I think. For those who don't know, Dave is Aku's a child, and Aku is going to get all into what Shanae has suggested.
Yes. So thank you, Shanae. It didn't occur to me that I had never fully talked at length about my experience with teen pregnancy and now raising a special needs or a disabled child. I am trying to get more comfortable with identifying my son as a disabled child, and that's me working on my ableism. Mm-hmm. So we are going to get all into my life story, y'all. Haha.
Before you start, I did want to ask about the distinction, and if you don't know, or because we didn't talk about this before, this can be cut, but if not, what is the distinction between special needs and disabled, if at all?
Oh, Samantha, I don't know.
Girl. Okay.
I don't know. You keep it in because I want the transparency. I don't know.
Okay.
I guess that's something I have to look into as I, you know, learn more about labels and identity, and then hopefully, you know, and then teach him about labels and identity. I guess I'll have to learn more about that and see what he prefers. It's not a conversation we have had as of yet. So stay tuned.
Okay. Stay tuned. Cool.
Okay. So I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and it is my belief that I conceived around Christmas of 2008. Before getting pregnant, I had been fucking for about 3 years, you know, quote unquote, lost my virginity. Virginity is a construct.
Yes. Had penetrative sex for the first
time. Yes, I had penetrative sex for the first time around 13. And of course, it wasn't frequent because my ass was a demisexual. Didn't know it then. So, you know, very sporadic sexual encounters. Mm-hmm. My first real relationship, I would say, was with my son's father at 16. So that might have been the start of more consistent sex, but also was very infrequent because I'm a demisexual and I didn't really like that nigga. And those that knew me around the time, I would always say, you know, I love him, which meant I cared for him and he was familiar, but I don't like him. And nobody understood what that meant. But like, that's the only way I could verbalize it. Like, I don't like him. And to like meant like this passionate emotional attachment that just was not there for me during the very beginnings of our relationship. Mm-hmm. So I cared for him deeply.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as you can imagine, having penetrative sex at 13, I was definitely out there raw dogging it, having unprotected sex because of poor sexual education and because I came from a African Catholic home, which literally said boys do not exist until you have graduated out of college and or medical school. And now we expect grandchildren. Like, they just did not exist until you were about 33. And then all of a sudden they want grandkids. And you're like, how?
How am I supposed to accomplish that?
I got to date people and I don't know how to date because I am in my mid-30s and I ain't never spoke to a nigga. So that was the background that I was coming from. I'm sure there was like sex ed classes that I giggled through in school and stuff. Most of my sexual... Thank you.
We went to the same schools. No. I think maybe like when you were pregnant is when When I had my first health education class, where they talked about
so, yeah, there was just no sex education except for, you know, the gossip that me and my same aged, same mind peers would share with each other, which was probably more misinformation than anything else.
Yeah.
So, of course, I had no knowledge of the possibility of sperm in pre-cum. So before people with penises climax, they release a fluid called pre-ejaculatory fluid, or aka pre-cum. Now, pre-cum comes right out before semen. It's a lubricative kind of fluid, and it is its purpose is to remove debris and stuff out of the urethra. So it pre-cum can have live sperm in it that can lead to pregnancy. And many people have the false belief that pre-cum doesn't include sperm, so there's no risk of intended pregnancy, but that's not all the way true. Mm-hmm. So pre-cum as a fluid itself does not contain sperm, but there is a possibility for sperm to leak into pre-cum because the body just be doing what it be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a 2011 study, and Sam is going to link that in the show notes for you, that examined 40 samples of pre-cum that were retrieved from or volunteered from 27 different cisgendered men.
Mm-hmm.
And 11 out of those 27 subjects, or at least 41% of that study group, produced pre-cum samples that contained sperm in it.
Wow.
And in 10 out of those 11 cases, there was a reasonable proportion of sperm that was motile. So like the sperms were swimming, they were alive and ready to go. Those volunteers produced pre-cum samples up to 5 separate occasions, and sperm was found in almost all of those occasions.
Wow.
There was another study published in 2016 that showed actively mobile sperm and pre-cum in 16% of the 42 participants, or which they labeled quote unquote healthy men. So there be sperm and pre-cum, y'all. I want y'all to know that this is the moral of a cool story. If they put it on my tombstone, that's what I want you to know, okay? There is sperm and pre-cum.
Comma, y'all. Period.
Y'all. Comma, y'all. Share it with the teens in your life.
Alternate episode name right there. Put it on a t-shirt.
So that is literally how I believed my son was conceived. Mm-hmm. And that is a story I stick to this day. There, I got pregnant off of pre-cum.
Would you ever tell Dave that? Moral of the story, sperm and pre-cum.
Yes, I would. Because if he is engaging in sexual and penetrative sex with, you know, a person who can get pregnant, he needs to know that we got to wrap it up before the genitals are even near each other.
Yeah.
We got to slap it on because them niggas can swim, meaning the sperm, and all you need is a little proximity, okay? And then the universe be doing what it want to do.
Yeah. Also, I mean, STIs can be carried in pre-cum too?
Yes. STIs can be carried in pre-cum. So yes, that is to like drive home the importance of wrapping it up.
Yes, wrap that shit up, B.
Exactly how I'm going to tell him. All right. So at the time, there was also, you know, at that age, not sexually experienced, not sexually educated, there was a lot of sexual coercion into having unprotected sex.
Mm.
And, you know, my poor ability to assert myself and the false belief that pregnancy couldn't happen to me, even though I knew it was a thing, all attributed to me also getting knocked up off of pre-cum. And I wanted to dive into that belief that pregnancy couldn't happen to me because it lasted through a lot of my pregnancy. So in psychology, there is a theory called Elkin's theory of adolescent egocentrism and the personal fable. And in this theory, this potentially white man, didn't look him up, but more than likely white, has this idea of the personal fable, which is a developmentally normal cognitive limitation that adolescents, teenagers have, that in that time frame, we believe that we are highly special and unlike anyone else who have walked the earth. So the personal fable can cause teens and tweens to believe that nothing bad could possibly happen to them because they're just exceptional. Like, in other words, they're so special, they must be invulnerable. And you will see this. You had it yourself.
Yes. You might have it right now if you are a listener of that age.
Yes. And you will see it in teenagers. There's this idea, like, we know bad things happen, but oh no, it can't happen to me. Like, it's gonna happen. It just somehow not to me.
Yeah.
Why? Couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not a conscious, like, I didn't think, oh, I'm the baddest bitch alive. That's why nothing bad can happen to me. It's really intrinsically, I'm just thinking bad things happen to other people, but it just won't happen to me.
You know why I feel like, besides like, oh, this is a theory that many people have validated, but this is why I think it's true. Because I have always been a very anxious person and always thinking of worst case scenarios, but I also did many things that made no sense. And like, how do you reconcile with both of those things? Mm-hmm. I wasn't developed yet.
Yeah. So I wanted to get a bit into the sexual coercion because it's really where my demisexuality came into play long before I knew it was a thing. So I talked about having this poor emotional connection with my then boyfriend, now baby daddy. And I'm going to be specifically using the word baby daddy because I like to say it. when I say that I loved him but did not like him, literally, that was a concept for me. I cared deeply and fondly for this person but did not like him. And that was because we started out very rocky and there was a history of infidelity that really severed the emotional attachment in the beginning and was never really reconciled. So we were just kind of, I was in this space of where, again, this was a familiar person, known him since I was 13, on and off. But because my emotional attachment had been severed in this way by this indiscretion, I just wasn't there emotionally. Mm-hmm. That changed at a different part in our relationship, and I definitely saw the difference. Like, it was just a complete 180. We'll talk about that a bit later.
Okay.
So typically we were having sex because he would ask, because he would initiate, and because I felt I had to, because I was his girlfriend and that's what girlfriends do. Again, poor education at that age, and kind of out of fears that if I didn't have sex with him, he would cheat on me with somebody else. So yeah, that's how the sexual coercion came into play. On the day, on the Christmas, December 25th, 2008, in which I conceived, he had initiated sex and I really didn't want to. So it kind of started. And then midway, I was like, nah, I'm not into this. Let's go to the mall and buy me Uggs. And that's what we did. You know, like, we just stopped Uggs. And then I went to go buy Uggs. Now, that is called coitus interruptus, which can also, I like the scientific names of things, which is also the term known for the pullout method. It was not, in fact, like the pullout method in this scenario. We just kind of stopped, you know, midway and went about our business. But I also did not know at that time, because again, poor sexual education, that sperm can live up to 5 days in the body. So here is this, you know, high frequency of sperm in pre-cum, and then it's just living in my reproductive tract for like 5 days.
Niggas is lit.
And then soon after, I don't think I was ovulating at the time, but close enough to ovulation. The sperms is living, the eggs is released, and boom, we have a zygote. And that zygote split into many cells, and now is my 11-year-old child. That looks just like me. So moving on to my pregnancy experience. I did not know I was pregnant until I was 6 months along. You gonna ask how? I'm gonna tell you how. So, of course, I was missing my period, but my cycle had been irregular since the first day I got it. So that didn't mean a damn thing to me.
So your cycle has always been irregular?
My cycle since the moment it dropped. And that's why when my cycle is off, I'm not getting it. I'm not really worried, you know. In my mind, it's like, uterine cancer. But, you know, right in the present, I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And actually, tangent, went to see my gynecologist about my infrequent cycle and the possibility of PCOS. And she was like, you know, all my things came back normal and in range. And she was like, you know, if your cycle has, as per your history, your cycle has always been abnormal. It just seems like my hormones just don't sync in the right way to, you know, lead to a period each and every month. She's mm-hmm. like, 2 to 3, you know, 3 to 4 periods a year for you will be normal unless you're trying to conceive. And I was like, all right, got you, sis. I'll see you if something else happens. So back on track. So my period was irregular. Didn't mean anything to me. And also this personal fable and this belief that, you know, this personal fable tied to this belief that we weren't really having sex because, you know, sometimes he would get to come, sometimes he wouldn't, you know, in my mind, I believe we weren't having real sex, sex as depicted in what I probably saw in porn or in movies. So those two tied together. I didn't think none of it. I was like, I'm going about my business. During that time, I had specific symptoms, though. So like I had this chronic headache that sat at the top of my skull. And no matter what I took, that headache was not going away. Like it was just there. And then I also had a lot of fatigue. For the first 3 months, a bitch would go to school, come home, and sleep. Like, I wasn't... And then get up at, like, midnight, slap some butter on some bread, eat it, and go back to bed. Like, I was knocked. Like, when I say I was sleeping, partially because of this chronic headache, the only way I could escape it was sleeping. I was also fatigued. The relationship was rocky at that point, so I was also depressed. There was a lot going on for me, so I slept straight through for like the first 4 months, y'all. A bitch was out, okay? But I didn't have any morning sickness. I didn't have any breast pain or, you know, what we feel are typical pregnancy symptoms. Or probably I did and slept through that shit too. I don't know. When I say I was sleeping, I was sleeping. I started to gain weight and I rationalized that because I'm literally eating bread and butter at midnight and going to sleep on that shit. You know, like waking up at 1 a.m., having a fried chicken and going to bed. Like, you know, in my mind, I'm like, yes, I'm going to gain weight. Also, my body image and weight was a, you know, was a thing for me during that time as well. I was bigger than my peers. So me gaining weight was normal in my, you know, in my sense. I was sensitive about my weight. I took note of it, but just kind of rationalized it as, bitch, you're eating bread and butter and fried chicken at 2 a.m. and going right back to sleep. Yes. Mm-hmm. After a consecutive amount of time with that, you will gain some weight. And I think it was one day that a friend pulled me to the side and just straight out asked me if I was pregnant. And of course, I was like, no, what you mean? And then she went a bit deeper and asked me when my last period was. And I was like, you know, I ain't seen that bitch in a while either. You might be on something. But again, I thought it just couldn't happen to me. I was, you know, my cycle was missing. Maybe that was it. And I was gaining weight. And it was just like, you know, something hormonal to me. Pregnancy just did not occur. So down to me actually finding out I was pregnant, my family members were also noticing this weight gain as well. And possibly inadvertently tracking my periods. We were a house full of a lot of women. You kind of knew when someone was on their period. And I kind of believe they probably were tracking that bitch, because that's African parents for y'all. Well, that's my African caretakers for y'all.
You ain't seen a pad in the garbage in a while.
Okay. So then one day, I remember it was before I was getting ready to go to church, as I normally do. It was a Sunday morning, and my mom, who I would see on the weekends during that time, she came in as I was getting dressed and was, you know, basically asked me if I was pregnant. And I was like, no. Like, if you asked me if I was pregnant during that time, I was going to tell you no. And I remember we got into this heated argument about it back and forth. And she was like, all right, we're going to go take a test, because she didn't believe me, because she has experience being pregnant twice. She knows what pregnancy is. And here I am, just a mom. No, I ain't. So we went, we got the test, we came back home. And I remember when I say with conviction I was not pregnant, y'all, like, I was ready to take this test and prove her wrong and curse her out. Like, you was not gonna tell me I was pregnant. We took this test and we got the one that reads with the letter, with the words. And, you know, to this day, that's the only pregnancy test I buy. I'm not fucking with no lines. I need to see the words, okay? So we got the ones with the words, and I sat down, I peed on it, and I waited. Not nervous or anything, because I knew it was going to say not pregnant, and I was going to be like, hat, bitch, and go, and, you know.
So you were just annoyed, like.
I was annoyed. So I'm like, y'all going to stop asking me these questions. And when that bitch said pregnant, I was like, oh, I was like, I immediately picked up the second one out the box and peed on that bitch
again.
And it said pregnant again. Did question. Do y'all think I thought I was pregnant then? No.
Still no.
Still no. At that point, my mind said.
Defective ass test.
No, not even a defective test. My mind said, I am growing some kind of tumor and it's reading as. Yo, the adolescent mind, the teenage mind is a funny thing. Like, hilarious.
I don't think that's how those work.
It's literally not how it works. But my mind automatically said, I am obviously growing some kind of tumor because I'm missing my pregnant. And I'm going to go, you know, we're going to go to the doctor and they're going to tell you, you know, that it's not a baby growing inside of me. It is some mass of horrible cells. Like, I was ready to have cancer before I could even think about pregnancy as an option. Like, it just, and this is why we need to have, you know, sexual education. Because just, the two, you see 1 + 1, but it was not connecting for
me. It's 85. It's 85.
Like, it just was not connecting for me. Like, and this was, people thought that I was in denial. No, I, like, just believe, like, with conviction. I was not denied. It did not add up. Like, it just was not, the logic was not there in my adolescent brain. I'm sorry. And this is coming from me who, you know, I did really well academically. People, you know, prized me as a gifted child and a smart child. So they just could not fathom that I was just lacking the logic in this. They're like, you're a smart kid. How are you not getting this? And in my mind was just like, I don't know what y'all talking about, but I'm not, like, it just was not getting it. Oh, man. They were, like, kind of talks about it. My brain blocks this out because trauma. Mm-hmm. And really, it was like, all right, we got to go see an OBGYN. So I went to go see an OBGYN who confirmed that I was about 5 months, like a week to 6 months along at that point. Before then, there was like pressure from my family to abort, you know, if I was within that time frame. And that was just something that I was not for. Like, that was just, and I am very pro-choice that, you know, do as you need to do. But for me, it just wasn't. I was very stuck in like my Catholic beliefs as well. So like, that's for other people. But for me, I'm figuring this out. So then when I found out I was so far along, I was actually really relieved because I know that they would have forced me to abort. And that was just something I didn't want to do. So I was actually really relieved to find out I was that far along. And legally, they could not, you know, like make me do that. So now I'm 2 trimesters in, a bitch halfway through.
Yeah.
Just finding out that I'm pregnant. So, of course, I had to take the prenatal vitamins and such and get the sonograms to make sure everything was developing well. And, you know, chromosomal tests and all those things. And I remember going to a guidance counselor. Can't remember that woman's name, but God bless her. And I was just in shambles. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, you know, no one in my family has experienced teenage pregnancy. Like, they're all adults in their life. Like, this was literally an anomaly for my family. No one had answers. We didn't know what was going to happen. So I went to this guidance counselor and she was like, all right, you know, you'll finish out the school year. And I was also behind on credits because the bitch be cutting the fuck. Because, you know, when do teenagers have time to have sex? When you don't go to school. Duh. So like certain classes, I remember 9th grade, I was always late to math. I don't think I pass algebra? Probably failed it. And then gym. I didn't have enough gym credits because a bitch hated to change. If I put this outfit on, this is the outfit I'm wearing. I'm not putting on that uniform. And then when you put the clothes back on, it don't fit the same way you did when you put it on in the morning. I didn't like it.
You also stink afterwards. It kind of sucks.
Exactly. I also stink. I don't like feeling sweaty and then putting clothes on after. We ain't had no showers like in those fancy white people movies. So like... Mm-hmm. Why y'all making me do this at 7 a.m? Why is this my first period? So you just want me to stink the whole day? Y'all are rude. Y'all are rude. We are very, very disrespectful to teenagers in high school.
Really, like, are. First of all, why are these niggas waking up at like 5, 6 o'clock in the morning to get to school by 7?
To be in a whole class, have you an honors English at 7 a.m? Who was listening?
I don't even talk to people at 7 a.m. anymore. It's really fucked up, honestly.
Knowing that these kids went to sleep at 3 a.m.
Exactly.
We are so rude to teenagers. Just so disrespectful.
Had to take a bus for an hour to get there. It's all fucked up. It's really not
good. You in and shit and just expecting stellar academic performance under those kind of circumstances. Knowing all we had was a can of soda and some Twizzlers. Y'all are rude to these kids. Huh, but that's another tangent for another time. Mm-hmm. So I went to this guidance counselor. She helped me create this plan. I was like, all right, bet. So I continued to go to school mad pregnant. It never dawned on me of dropping out, you know, and that's because my family values education. Like, a high school diploma is not an achievement. A bachelor's degree is a high school diploma. Like, you have to be enrolled in some type of tertiary education. So, like, I was going to go, what else was I going to do? I was going to go to school. Like, so I picked my ass up and went to school each and every day, mad pregnant, like mad pregnant. Shoes don't fit, wearing flip-flops. Like, and I'm a person that lives in my own world. Everyone else just does not exist to me. So this didn't seem abnormal to me. Of course, there were like rumors and people talking about me in high school. I didn't even realize that was a thing until I was like 23. I was like, oh, niggas noticed me? Yes, they noticed your big ass, pregnant ass, walling down the hall, bitch. Like, what do you mean niggas noticed you? Your big ass. But like, I was just in my own world. Like, and as I should be, I had a lot going on. Fuck what y'all talking about. Like,
yeah.
Bitch about to have a whole baby. What you mean?
Like, we gonna fight? Like,
I was just in my own world. Didn't mean any, like, it just didn't connect. And I think it wasn't until I was a lot older that the gravity of that connected for me, because it just, I didn't realize that like people got pregnant and dropped out of high school. Like, I was going to school. Like, I just, unless the school told me I couldn't go, I was finna be there. Like, that was it. And yeah, something when I was thinking about this was that, Sam, you know our high school. That shit mm-hmm. is packed.
It's extremely crowded. Yeah.
Packed in the halls. All those school administrators saw my pregnant ass up and through that bitch and never thought of my safety.
I was wondering, like, did any special accommodation? No. First of all, like, you were on public transportation, right?
Yes.
Like, you was taking the bus. That's already crowded in the first place. And then you're with like a whole bunch of, okay, one thing about you, because we weren't really that close in high school until towards mm-hmm. the end of high school, is that you're very like, I need this, so you're going to give it to me, and it's just duh. Mm-hmm. Like, so like, if you needed an accommodation, you would just be like, okay, so get up. And like, just look at the person like, okay, when is it going to happen? So that's how I imagined you navigating through all of this and like being safe, because you were never scared to like open your mouth and be like, okay, this is what I need to do to be in the best position possible. But really, like, you should have gotten some support.
Yeah. And I guess that is how I navigated through and just thought it was normal. But thinking back when I was, you know, producing for this, I was like, none of them school administrators, nobody thought I needed an escort or, you know, to be let out of class early so I could get out of them crowded. Like, when I say them school, in our big ass high school, them hallways was crowded as fuck.
Yes. When me and Rob did the high school episode, I mentioned this, but I'll mention it again. Our main floor was literally called 42nd Street, because like, it was crowded like Times Square.
It literally, and I think about it now, I'm like, this is how Corona spread, because that's just nasty.
That's, like, that's what I said on the episode too. I was like, y'all open it up, that school? Everybody's sick, nigga.
Everybody, like, just, it was, and then the teachers had the nerve to look at you talking about why you late to class. Bitch, do you know what I endured trying to get to this class?
Hell.
Be happy I'm here. Yeah. But nonetheless, so yeah, thinking about it, no accommodations made for me. I was just out there, just asserting my way through, like, you see me coming, move the fuck out my way.
Yes. Because
also, yeah, I was a very angry pregnant teenager, so I probably would have fought you if you stepped to me wrong at like 8 months pregnant. Please say something to me so I could whoop your ass while I'm pregnant. Please do. Or wait till I drop this baby and come back and whoop your ass. I was a baby.
Did
angry.
Anyone step to you?
Oh, no.
Did you feel like Despite staff not making any accommodations, did you feel like other students made accommodations? Like, it's the changeover. Everybody move out of the way. Who was coming down? You know, she
pregnant as
fuck.
Yeah, I feel like other people were maybe not going out of their way, you know, definitely not throwing their jackets over puddles, but like just out of human courtesy, you know, would make room for me and wouldn't start shit with me. So yeah, that was that. And I think that, yeah, that because of that, I just navigated. Thank God, you know, sometimes adolescents can be humans because sometimes we ain't. We're just psychopaths. But other times it kicks in. You know, humanity's like, let's treat people with kindness. We see a need here. So, yeah. But, yeah, I was a very angry teenager and hormonal because I was pregnant. I wish somebody would have said something to me because I would have whooped your ass. Oh, man. Good times. Good times.
That would have been kind of funny to watch. That would have been a good story for the grandkids.
And I would, you know, at that time, because my adolescent brain was not formed, I probably would have fought you. Like now as an adult, like, oh no, I am in a vulnerable situation, should not be, you know, getting in physical assaults for my health and the health of my fetus. But at that age, probably would have fought you.
Any bitch can catch it. Any bitch can catch it.
That was the rule from like 16 to like 23. Like, I'm telling you. And I'm a very passive person.
Any bitch can still catch it.
But if you disrespect me, that's when it comes on. Like other times I'm like, oh no, we don't need to fight. But if I feel the impetus, we gonna throw these hands.
Those two things can coexist.
So yeah, I was mad pregnant for the rest of that semester. And then I went to summer school to continue to make up. That was the plan me and the guidance counselor had, continue to make up for the credits I was missing. And the funny thing is, I remember I was enrolled in gym for summer school, and the gym teachers, again, I'm like 8 months pregnant, gym teachers looking at me like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with you? And I'm like, nigga, you're supposed to pass me, the fuck. Like, I'm gonna sit here on this bleacher pregnant as fuck watching y'all play basketball or whatever the hell you think you're gonna do, and at the end you're gonna give me this grade and I'm gonna get half of my credit and that's that, good luck. Like, what are you asking these questions as if I actually have to participate for this grade?
Why is that even a thought in your mind?
You see me? You see me?
Yeah.
Those white people, I tell you. And then after summer school, I continued to go to school. I was literally in school up until the day I went into labor.
Wow.
And I remember the running joke in my U.S. history class with the short-necked, short white man. I can't remember his name.
Was it the racist one?
Yeah, probably. He would look at me and say, you know, please do not go into labor in my class, as if I had control in that bitch. Like,
that seems like something that he would
say. If my water breaks here, my water's going to break here and you going to mop it. Like, I don't know what you what you think I'm supposed to do. But all my teachers would say that like it was funny. Nigga, the fuck? So, yeah, it was literally up until the day I went into labor. And I went into labor on September 30th, 2009. I said I wasn't going to talk about labor and delivery. So I guess I won't talk about labor and delivery.
Is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you? Is it helping you learn some new shit? Is it helping you unlearn some old shit? Are you just enjoying the storytelling from the mastermind that is Akua right now? Or are you just having a good time with the hoes? If all of those things ring true, then we love to hear all of those things. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you are listening to us on a podcast app, take a moment to subscribe to us or drop 5 stars and a rating for the homies. If you got a little extra change, you can drop some cash in the PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or you can come join our Patreon community and access our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month. That is USD, because Patreon does accept all kinds of currencies, which is good. By going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast. It's a very good podcast. We love and thank you all for your continued support. Now let's get into this post-pregnancy.
During my pregnancy, my baby daddy ghosted me. And I remember like finding out I was pregnant, then me and my mama went over to his mama's house and we talked about it, you know, and that was pretty that, like, pretty much that with them. But I didn't hear or see that nigga through most of my pregnancy. It was me. And then after he was there for the delivery, because I called my mama and said, go get that nigga. Like, I will fight somebody in here. If he is not here as I have this baby, there's going to be problems. So he was there for the delivery. And he did kind of come around in the first few months that I had him. But he was still cheating. Because niggas. That's it. So here I am. I am 17. I have had this baby and my family life was in shambles and it was just not a fun time. Mm-hmm. Not a fun time in those first couple of months. Mm-hmm. In those first couple of months, I actually did not go back to school. So I had dropped out for a few months just because I was taking care of a newborn and wasn't sure how to navigate that and move forward. Mm-hmm. So I was out of school for a couple of months. And I was also, I'm going to add this in, was breastfeeding. Because I was going to lie and say I enjoyed that experience. Did not enjoy that experience at all. No one tells you how hard breastfeeding is. Like, that shit is stressful. Mm-hmm. But would do it again. I feel like it did have a lot of, it set a good foundation for my son's health overall. Mm-hmm. So definitely would, it's something I would recommend for people who can breastfeed and parenting. So we'll move right into my son's diagnoses. So in utero, when I finally found out I was pregnant and we're getting all of these sonograms and exams to make sure everything was healthy and moving, he was actually diagnosed with aqueductal stenosis. And aqueductal stenosis is the narrowing of the aqueduct, the channel, a specific channel between the third and fourth ventricle. These are the parts of the brain. Your brain has ventricles, much like your heart. Your brain has four. So it's a narrowing of the channel between those two ventricles, which blocks the flow of cerebrospinal fluid. So in your brain, there is fluid keeping everything moisturized and wet in a sense, or moist in a sense, so that the electricity that your brain conducts can do that within the nerves. He had this blockage so that there wasn't the cerebrospinal fluid was not flowing as easily. And when that happens, it collects in the ventricles of the brain. Mm-hmm. That was then upgraded, the diagnosis was upgraded to hydrocephalus at birth, which is a condition in which the cerebral spinal fluid collects in the ventricles of the brain. Mm-hmm. And it causes increased pressure in the brain because the brain is contained by our skull, but now it, you know, the, think of it as filling a water balloon. It's, you know, as it's filling, it's expanding, expanding, it's expanding, and your brain is expanding, but it's also contained in your skull. So at some point, there's just limited space for it to go.
Yeah.
He had surgery. So the talks were that he was going to have surgery after birth to correct this. And then in meeting with, I also had to talk a little bit about labor and delivery. I had a C-section just because of already in utero, his head was bigger than that of a fetus his age because of this condition. And my doctor didn't want, what she said was she didn't want distress on him as he was being born. But I also feel like doctors push C-section so that they can have like this record of successful births. Mm-hmm. Either way, Assist made it through, you know, labor and delivery, which I now know is not is a feat because they be letting us die. That's, you know, I'm happy for that. So I had a C-section that went well. And then upon examination, the doctors were like, oh, you know, we can wait a little bit. You know, he's just born. We don't want to add distress to his body that might affect life expectancy. Like, they didn't want to have surgery that, you know, he wouldn't make it through. So then he then had surgery at 4 months of age. Now, if y'all probably ain't never seen baby pictures of my baby, but he had a big old head. Like, he just had a big old head in his little body. It makes me laugh every time I think about it.
But because his head was not, you know, proportioned to his body size, that led to a delayed development, you know. Mm. At about 2 months, babies are supposed to be able to lay on their stomach and pick their heads up. He was struggling because his head was heavy. And he was a heavy-ass baby. I literally believe just because of his head. Like, carrying him, he just felt like bricks. Like, he was a heavy... I remember picking up other people's babies and be like, yo.
This is a light-ass baby you got here.
Yo, this is a light-ass baby. And I would carry my son everywhere. Like, yeah. I don't know where I found that strength because that boy was heavy. I remember I'll be with my friends and just pass them along every 15 minutes. Like, all right, somebody else got to carry him. I'm tired. So because he wasn't hitting these milestones, New York has a program called Early Intervention. And he began receiving physical therapy to help him strengthen some of these muscles, accommodate for these delays, and start to meet his milestones. So we started at like 3 months. He was then able to lift his own head. He began to like be able to sit up on his own, and was scooting. So when it was scooting, you know, after sitting comes crawling for in that kind of, mm-hmm. typical development. But my son was scooting. He was using his upper body to move mm-hmm. around on the floor, never quite in a crawling position. Mm-hmm. You could put him in a crawling position. He wouldn't stay that way. Eventually, he'd be flat and just kind of scooting himself around. Mm-hmm. And I never really knew what it was. It was just kind of waiting to see him continue to hit those milestones. Maybe he'll get it. You know, he's a bit slower because he's had a slow start. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll get it. Eventually, he just kept scooting and then would start to pull himself to stand. So it was like, oh, he might just be skipping crawling altogether because some kids do that. Mm-hmm. So he would start to pull himself to stand, but would not walk. And eventually we started to notice this malformation of his feet. He has what is called, scissor walking, in which the feet are like turned in and cross each other. So, and he was never like flat, you know, when you stand, you're flat on your feet. He was always on his tippy toes, the tendon of the ankle really shortened and tight. So this went on from 3 months to about 18 months, you know, and kids are walking anywhere between 9 months to 18 months. So we're just kind of waiting it out, still doing physical therapy, seeing what's happening. And around 18 months, one of his physical therapists mentioned the prospect of cerebral palsy. And he, you know, he said it. His name was Shane. He was kind of cute. Really liked it.
Hey, Shane.
And he said it so matter-of-factly, like, yeah, your son has cerebral palsy. You know, didn't they tell you he wasn't breathing at birth? And I'm like, nigga, do you got birth charts? I don't know. Like, no, nobody told me any of this. What are you talking about? So I took that information and I did research on my own and found this famous doctor, Dr. Kim, in the city who specialized in cerebral palsy. She's a psychiatrist. And I, you know, got the referrals and I made the appointment and got to see him. And she took one look at him standing and she was like, yeah, he has a spastic cerebral palsy. Like literally just looked at him and was like, oh, yep, that's it. That, you know, that's CP. And, you know, to get an appointment with a specialist, that takes like 6 months. So by the time he was formally diagnosed, he had hit like about 2. So he was diagnosed with spastic diplegic cerebral palsy, which means diplegic cerebral palsy is poor motor functioning in either one half of the body, typically the lower half of the body, caused by brain damage. Cerebral palsy is caused by brain damage, whether in utero, you know, during birth or immediately after birth. Mm-hmm. And spastic means that there is high muscle tone. So the muscles, when you contract your muscles, like you're doing a bicep or something like that, his muscles just stay that way. They mm-hmm. do not let loosen or release. They are always static because of the nerve signals from the brain to mm-hmm. that muscle region. And looking back at it now, mind you, you know, I was a very active parent when I had my son. So like he always went to his doctor's appointments. I did everything to like make sure his health was good. Both his pediatrician missed this, as well as his neurosurgeon, who we saw after surgery, saw like every 3 months. So I remember the follow-up session with, I had a follow-up appointment with his neurosurgeon, and I mentioned the diagnosis, and he was like, oh, okay. And like, I'm starting to remember that neither the pediatrician or the neurosurgeon had really asked if he was meeting his milestone, but I also kind of attributed it to the fact that we didn't expect him to like really meet them on time because of, you know, how he was starting out in life. Mm-hmm. So I think that may have just been it. Mm. That probably might just be me giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I did what had to be done and got him the diagnosis. And this doctor...
you really OD. I just want to commend you for that because I didn't know that you found a famous doctor who specializes in CP at what, like 18 years old?
At like 18. And it was just me. It was me and the Google, y'all.
You and Google, literally. Like, no wonder you do so much goddamn good research for this like, show, bitch. Like,
sheesh. Was just me and Google's, and I was like, something gotta give. Like, so, but thank you. So this special doctor, she did a procedure in injecting Botox, the same like face paralyzer, into, you know, the affected areas to help loosen it. And then it's followed by, you know, aggressive physical therapy to help him maintain the strength. And that was to be the plan, that he would, you know, continue to get these Botox injections. They lasted for about 6 months. So he did like 2 rounds per year and then continue in physical therapy. And then we'll see how he progressed. A lot of her clients were able to like achieve mobility and, you know, walking just through the Botox alone. But further surgeries can come along depending on how the kids, you know, fare under that treatment. So he did about maybe 3 rounds of Botox with her. So they're supposed to happen every 6 months. So the Botox lasts for every 6 months, but then there's also getting the appointment with a specialist, which you have to wait like 6 months. So like the time periods would just be extended, you know. It wasn't like, all right, Botox wore off, we're back in her office. No, I had to then make an appointment, and that was months in advance, and then get another one. And so that went on for about 3 years. And then when he was 5, he had a procedure called, I did not write this down, it's called a dorsal rhizotomy, and it's a spinal procedure. And his neurosurgeon, the one that did his original, and you know, I'm sorry, I gotta go back, because his neurosurgeon works on a team with the specialized doctor that I found treating people with spastic cerebral palsy. Like, they had a special clinic in Columbia Hospital for it. So it was like, nigga, why I had to go through the Googles when you was the plug?
Yeah.
Just stressing me out.
Yeah.
And mind you, during this time, I was also pursuing a bachelor's degree. I was stressed. Yeah. And trying to live my best teenage life.
Yeah.
All at the same time. So his neurosurgeon and this other specialized neurosurgeon did that spinal procedure, and they go into the spine and sever the nerves that are sending these wrong signals to his muscles, and then close him back up. And then he goes through aggressive physical therapy. So he did inpatient physical therapy for that whole year.
When you say aggressive, do you mean a lot?
Yeah, so aggressive physical therapy, like physical therapy each day for, I think the health insurance will pay for like an hour per session. So like 7 days a week. He lived in the hospital for like 6 months. And this hospital was in Westchester. And I was also in school and working at that time. So like he was there by himself a lot of that time. I would have to go and visit him during, I'm going to get emotional. I don't want to get emotional. Give me a minute. he was up there by himself for a lot of the days. And that like just killed me. Like me and my son had been inseparable since birth. Like he just lived on my body, and then he was just hours away by himself, just with nurses. And I remember I would like fight with his father because his father wasn't in school and he wasn't working. And I'm like, go and stay with him. Like, I know it's uncomfortable, but like, he's 5 and he's up there by himself. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And he was just an asshole. But nonetheless, I would ride the Metro North every weekend that I could. And I went up there and I would be with him Saturday through Sunday. And I would call him on the phone. And like those nurses, like I'd call the nurse station like, hey, let me talk to Dave. And, you know, he was fine. You know, they made sure that he was comfortable and he was playing Mad Wii. Because he was also there. He was like bedridden after spinal surgery. So, yeah, but they made sure he was comfortable and I would go see him as often as I could and spend like weekends there, whatever. And then eventually, yeah, he was there for like about 6 months and then he was able to go home. And then this was also the year he was starting kindergarten. He was 5. He was turning 5 that October, so he was 4. So he was turning 5, and I remember I was in the search for kindergartens, and he would still need physical therapy. But to be quite honest, physical therapy provided in New York City by the Department of Education is just trash. So I was able to finagle the school. It's a the hospital is a children's hospital, the pediatric hospital. So they have a school attached, a Union Free School District attached for the kids who are inpatient but also need an education because the kids got to learn. So they have a school that goes from kindergarten, from pre-K to high school. So all grades. If you in that hospital, you finna get an education. So I was able to finagle him a spot in the kindergarten class and keep him there. And he was able to continue getting physical therapy 5 days. Like, just more, the services they provide him are not comparable to New York's, what New York City would have provided him. So I was in there finagling, okay, hustling. And he was there from kindergarten to fourth grade. He was there all of that time. I was trying to push it to fifth grade, but they gave me a hard time. But he was there getting physical therapy 5 times a week for 30 minutes. When I say like this is unheard of, like it's just unheard of. You know, he was getting occupational therapy 3 times a week. He was getting speech therapy because his speech was also delayed. And you learn how much of this is so interconnected in your development as a child. You know, like one thing truly follows another. So yeah, he was there till the fourth grade. And then he, just last year, he came back to the district for fifth grade. And when I tell you, like, the difference is not comparable. Like, he came back for fifth grade and the DOE gave him PT 2 times a week for 30 minutes each session. Literally, it takes 15 minutes from the PT for the therapist to get him out of class and into the area where they got to do PT. Like, so it's really 15 minutes of PT. Yeah. But whatever, I'm gonna fight with them at a whole nother time about that. Well, I mean, when I compare that now to telephysical therapy, which is just absolute crap, you know, we're just in a whole different ball game. So that was, you know, his diagnosis and his development from birth until now. We will get into dating with a special needs child. What was I out there finna do? So in terms of my dating life during that period, I was in and off and on again, you know, relationship with my son's father. And that was primarily it for the beginning, the formative years of Dave. Again, I was demisexual and didn't know it. So I really didn't have interest in other people when we were, when me and his father were off. I was going to school. I was focused on my kid and my ain't shit baby daddy. Like, that's just, that's what took
not
up
much
my
on
time.
Your plate, like not much room on your plate for anything else.
Yeah. So that's all that, you know, I really did for the first like 3 years, maybe 4 years. And we were off a lot more than we were on just because of that nigga. Like, he just irked my soul. So then in about 2013, we decided to like really give it a go. We were like, if we are going to be a family, we're going to be together, we're going to figure this out. So we started dating again in 2013. And that's when I noticed the formidable shift, because we had talked through some of these things. And I was able, you know, to kind of process and get past some of these things and really have a good emotional attachment with him. And that's when I noticed my engagement in the relationship, my engagement with sex with him was just like completely different. Like, we was out here just having mind blowing sex and I was just like, oh, this is lit. Like,
there's the demisexuality.
Yeah, I like when I look back at that, I'm like, oh, because I actually was emotionally invested in this. Like, I was not turned off by this person. Can't say I actually still liked him because I don't like that nigga. But but I mean it in a different way now. I just don't like him as a person now. So we were together from 2013 to 2015. And in 2015, Sam, how old was I in 2015?
What was that 6 years ago?
Yeah, I think
23.
Yes, I was 23. Haha. That's when the hoeing began. My hoeing did not start until 23.
That was a whole year for me as well. Hey, that's when this podcast was invented, bitch. Okay.
Like it was. That's when the hoeing began. And I was just kind of exploring my sexuality. I was talking to different guys. I was on the apps. Infamous stories you've heard on this podcast, such as the nigga who ate my pussy in a crib, pencil dick. You know, those are
stories that were written in as anonymous listener letters because we didn't have that many listeners yet. Thank you,
Akua. Oh, the good times.
Foundations of this show right there. Oh, the crib story. Okay.
Oh, you know, and I don't know that young man. I do not know that young man's name. Ooh, child, it escapes me.
If you're listening to this and you spent your early 20s living in a crib, or it was like a race car bed.
No, it was like a crib. It was like
it was actually a crib.
Yes, it was like those.
I made it better in my memory.
It's a there are cribs that you transform into like toddler beds and twin beds as the kid develops. So like it had the crib bars, like it was a crib in this like lavender room. He had been in there for a while, y'all. He had been in there for a while. Which also smelled like dog. Oh Lord, I wasn't making good decisions at this time because I was a new hoe. Okay. I was just out here trying to be carefree.
And the frontal lobe was not yet developed.
Was not developed. You know, I was not asserting myself and my worth the way I should have. But I did say he was not going to fuck me in that crib. That's one thing I knew. Okay. I may stoop low, but it ain't going to go that low. Oh, shit. So, yeah, I would, during that time, I would date on the weekends. By then, me and my son's father had broken up. We had gotten into this groove where on the weekends my son would go over to his house. So like the weekends were my free time. That's when I would date, hook up with niggas. And if I wasn't working or in school, my hours during the day was the time that I would, you know, like meet niggas, date, you know, be social. But my time with my son was my time with my son. Only if I felt like the relationship or the connection was serious that these men would get to meet Dave, and that's literally been two niggas in this time. So that's what dating with Dave was like.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm looking at images of the convertible cribs. Was it long enough for his body?
No. It was not long enough for his body.
So he had to fetal position when he slept at night.
Exactly. He was a bigger guy because I like my niggas thick and I'm a big bitch. So like we weren't fitting on that either.
It's like worse than the college dorm beds, which are notoriously. Yes. I don't know how I was fucking on those girls. It's a sliver of a mattress.
Of a mattress. We were figuring things out, okay? We were making things work with what we had. Because what we was going to be doing was fucking. So we was going to figure it out.
Okay. I'm sorry for interrupting. Please continue.
No worries. But dating dating and the way I structured it goes into finding the balance between myself and my parenting. And honestly, I really had poor parenting. It was either poor balance. It was either all Dave or all me. It was definitely better in the earlier years when he was younger because I only went to college and I was being financially supported by my mom. So I had a lot more free time and it was just me and Dave. So I remember I was cooking his meals from scratch. Like I was in here making ravioli with the flour and a rolling pin. Like he was eating gourmet. When I say we treat my son like a king, it's really horrible, y'all. It's absolutely horrible. 90% of his meals are always hot. My mother be taking special requests from the nigga. We be hand delivering the plate to him. That's like, so yo, cute. It is horrible. I'm now like, no, get your plate and put that shit in the sink. Dump it out. Like, ain't nobody else gonna be doing this for you as a grown ass nigga. Like, I have to switch my mentality. And a part of it comes from our ableism, thinking that he can't do for himself. Mm-hmm. A part of it comes from this African culture in which we treat these niggas like kings. Mm-hmm. And I'm really trying to, like, break out of it. Like, no, get your self-sufficient ass and go dump that plate in the goddamn sink. Mm-hmm. And next year he gonna be washing them shits too, like, one step at a time. But yes, I used to be in here just pot pieing and chefing it up just because I had free time to do so. As I got older and started working and, you know, pursuing a master's degree, that took a lot of my time. So I would say that has hit my parenting in a way that I haven't liked. Mm-hmm. And then when you throw mental health in it, there are just some days where I'd just be in bed, door closed, and he'd be in another room, and I just couldn't, you know, engage as the parent that I would want to be, and mm-hmm. cause a myriad of feelings and such. Mm-hmm. Guilt, mom guilt, I would call it. Mm. But yeah, it really hasn't been balanced. I've just been out here trying to do my best. I'm doing what I could. In terms of my sexual life, I've been co-sleeping with my son since he was born. Mm-hmm. He sleeps in the same bed as me. And that's because we live in a 2-bedroom New York City apartment. Mm-hmm. It just is what it is. So when it comes to, like, masturbating and other sensual stuff, that happens when he's away. Like, just out of human decency, like, I'm not going to
be not doing that up in here.
That I'm not going to be masturbating kind of next to my kid. Exactly. But now rarely happens since COVID because that nigga's always here. Yeah. He won't leave, y'all. He's always here. Like, come take him. Help. So definitely since COVID, we have been spending a lot of time together, not a lot of time for myself. And I'm not a masturbator in the shower kind of person. I'm a pillow person. I'm a pillow princess. I just like to lay down. Like, I ain't about to be standing and, you know, keeping balance and all that stuff. Mm-mm. That's not about to happen.
Do you have a standing shower or a tub?
I have a tub. Am I laying in a tub? No, because I got to clean that bitch out first. It's so many steps. I'm
baths
not about to do
are
any of that.
A complicated process.
Already complicated. I'm not about to do any of that. So it's been what it's been. Now that, okay, so we'll move into sex education with the kid. Ooh. That'll be the last segment or topic or, I don't know, word, Samantha. That'll be the last portion for today.
Yeah. Subheading.
Yeah. So what has sex conversation looked like with my kid? We started with consent conversations around age 5 because he was going to the special school and he liked this little girl in his kindergarten class named Leah. And I remember him liking her, and his grandparents automatically made her his girlfriend. Like, the idea of them being friends just did not exist for him. It's like, oh, his little girlfriend, oh, his little girlfriend. And I'm like, no, he can have platonic relationships with girls. Stop mm-hmm. doing that. But he latched onto that from them. So he, you know, he was just like, Leah's my girlfriend, Leah's my girlfriend, Leah's my girlfriend. So that's when these consent conversations started, because Leah wasn't showing signs that she was into the kid. Like, she was like, nah, I'm cool, we could be friends. And I'm like, you not gonna pressure this white girl to be your girlfriend, babe. You know, the dynamics are already bad when we add in race, because her parents are gonna come and then say that my black boy is harassing they white. Like, we not about to do all of that. She your friend, leave her alone. Yeah. So we had lots of conversations about consent and asking her if she liked him, and if she said no, respecting that, and, you know, so forth, and not telling her what she about to be in his life.
That is so lit that you did that at 5 years old. That is so lit. You were such a lit mom, Akua. Oh, I love you so much. I'm so proud.
I just saw it and I was like, this is not what we about to do. Like, you're not.
That's mad important to learn that so young, though, because, like, niggas have a problem with that to this day.
To this day.
Like, niggas is 30 out here calling people bitches because they didn't want to fucking respond to their DM.
Exactly. Now our consent conversations are more about me being intentional and asking him for his bodily consent and respecting his consent, because of his limited abilities. He's not really steady on his feet without his walking aid. So, mm-hmm. like, I still give him showers. And this is an 11-year-old pubescent boy. He's mm-hmm. going through puberty. It sucks. The BO is just out of this world, y'all. Help. You know, he's gotten this cisgender trait in which he don't want to wipe his ass. It's a lot, y'all. Help. Okay? I need help.
Just like, where did he get that from?
Why? Really, it's just him, he just wants to get back to his pleasurable things. He just wants to go back to his video game, like, man. I don't let him take his electronics into the bathroom. So like, he just wants to get up and go. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, go wipe your ass. Like, go wipe your ass. a lot of back and forth about that. But I've just kind of been used to doing things with his body without his consent. Mm-hmm. And now that he's getting older, not just that he's getting older, it kind of dawned on me that I'm not doing that, you know, and following, you know, sex positive Instagrams and, you know, those that are dedicated to how we interact with our kids, I realized that that was something I wasn't doing. I was interacting with his body and not asking his consent for it, which, you know, he could then generalize to interacting with other people's bodies and not asking for their consent for it. So I've been trying to be more intentional during those times in asking him, you know, if I could wash a certain area, or, you know, do you want to do it, or so forth and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that's what our consent conversations look like, as well as don't be telling niggas, you know, that you they boyfriend when they don't like you. Like, we're still on that. Like, don't, you know, don't do things to people that they didn't consent to. Mm-hmm. We've been having gender conversations a lot more recently, within the last 2 years. And that came from me kind of picking up on very gendered talks mm-hmm. that he's picked up from his grandparents. Mm. These grandparents be putting me through the ringer, y'all. Like, I just be out here. They just be putting me through the ringer. So, like, he would say stuff like, oh, only boys can do this. Or, like, he would legit tell me I couldn't sing parts of songs because they were boy songs. I was like, nigga, I'm about to sing whatever the hell I want to. I'm about to be both parts of these and ad lib. Don't tell me what I can't sing.
I'm Nelly and Kelly, okay?
Okay. So, it would come in that way. He has this habit of saying, I wish I was born a girl. And I would explore that with him. And I think it's just because he has a lot of woman influence in his life. Mm-hmm. And he just thinks we're lit. So he's like, oh, I cannot be a girl. Y'all seem lit. And I'm like, yeah, we'll talk about how the world doesn't see us like that one day, you know. So that's where it comes from. But like, when you ask him what his gender is, he's like, no, I'm a boy. Mm-hmm. I also think that that might come from, so I asked his consent to talk about him in this episode, and I told him, you know, what I'd be talking about, what I'd be sharing, and he recently came out to me as bisexual. Very interesting conversation, y'all. Mm-hmm. And I think a part of this, I wish I was born a girl, might be stemming from the fact that he has romantic crushes on boys and mm-hmm. only thought he could be a girl and have those. So, yeah, my baby out here just being bi, y'all.
I love it.
But, you know, in those conversations about gender, we also have, you know, discussions and education on trans people, on non-binary people, on intersex people, the differences between genitalia and gender, and really just exploring his perception of his own gender. Again, you know, these statements of, oh, I wish I was born a girl. It's like, all right, so what do you really mean by that? You know, let's see if I can help you find the language for what you're trying to convey in that. But again, I think he just thinks girls are lit and wants to be lit.
What is, like, when you have these kinds of conversations with him, what kinds of responses are you getting, or what kinds of questions is he asking? Is it just like, okay, here's the concept of what it means to be transgender? Is he like, okay, or is he like asking a little bit more, or like, just how does it
play it out? Depends if he has, most of the time he's just like, okay, he absorbs the information and goes right about his merry own life. But if he, you know, he'll ask clarifying questions if it's something that he doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. An actual example is skipping me, but we're still very much working on genitalia and gender, because he's hung up on that. He's like, you know, he's like, can boys have babies? And I'm like, yeah, trans men have babies all the time, you know. And can girls have penises? And I'm like, yeah, trans women, you know, have penises. And kind of, we working on that, y'all. we working on that. And then, I try not to throw too much on it, because when we throw in the concept of intersex people and their different combinations of, you know, however they present, I think that kind of goes over his head sometimes. So I'm like trying to learn to scale it back and give it to him in consumable. Like, he doesn't have to get it right now. He's 11. But I'm very all or nothing. So, like, I'm trying to, like, scale it back. And help him digest it a bit more. But we working on it, y'all. We working on it. So, you know, he came out as bi, explored that. He says he has romantic feelings for people he perceives as boys. I'm like, okay, cool. A lot of that is social media influence. So, like, he's on TikTok. My baby on TikTok, y'all. Like, that's where he lives. And I don't know what these kids be talking about in these TikTok comments, but these conversations is wild. So one day, he has a friend on TikTok named Jack, and Jack told his crush, who's also a boy, that he liked him, and now they go together because, you know, preteen life, right?
Wait, Dave and Jack go together?
No. Jack and some other boy go together.
Oh, I was like, Dave has a boyfriend? I'm so old.
You would have heard that. You would have heard that. No, Jack and some other boy go together. Okay. And apparently, Jack is now talking about being bisexual, but also asking if he's could be polysexual. So then Dave walks up to me, he's like, Ma, what's polysexual? And that's literally what our conversation is like. If he has a question, he knows he can ask me. So I'm in the kitchen minding my goddamn business, y'all. And I be feeling attacked by these questions sometimes because I don't be prepared. And he just comes, he's like, what's polysexual? So I was like, polysexual is kind of like pansexual, where you can like anyone of all genders. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he's starting to walk away, and I was like, where you learn that from? That, because that was in one of our conversations yet. And he's like, and then he told me this whole story about Jack and the boy, and I was like, show me the comment. And I'm like, and then in there I felt like this is a struggle that I have, and that there's a part of my brain which defaults to the parenting style I was raised in, and like shut this down and shelter him from it, you know? And I was like, there was a kind of a thought that was like, you got to stop talking to these TikTok kids because they exposing you to all these, you know, these things. And I'm not ready, basically, for you to be exposed to these things. But I didn't tell him he couldn't be on TikTok. You know, I swallowed that within myself. And I'm trying to move from a parenting place where, yes, the media, he's going to be exposed to different types of media. I still struggle with what I feel is appropriate and what's not appropriate. But what I want the foundation is that he can come and ask me about things rather than Googling and talking to his peers about it, because that's how I ended up knocked up over pre-cum. So, you know, I want him to be able to, you know, ask questions. And the funny thing is that sometimes he'll take these questions to my mother, and I'll hear her like just shut him down in the same way that she shut me down when I was younger. And I kind of laugh at it, at the irony, because like, I see it now. Like, I see where things went wrong for me and how, you know, she just can't correct that. But that's also her bringing in culture and all that other stuff. He claims that he told my mom that he was bisexual. I didn't hear that conversation, but she hasn't said anything to me about it. So it is, you know, what it is. One person he probably won't tell is his father. So we don't really co-parent. Like, I am the primary caretaker of my son. He has probably seen him 3 times since COVID. Me and my son's father don't communicate. He does not speak to me at all. Like, we do not communicate. So Dave will like text him through his iPad, and they'll have their own conversations. And I, you know, I let that for their relationship, but me and him do not talk at all. Like, for the longest, he could have passed away in COVID. I wouldn't have known. More than likely, his mama would have called me, but, you know, I wouldn't have known. So I don't know what's going on with his life. We just don't talk. But I know that he won't have that conversation. Like, he probably won't tell his dad because his dad is homophobic. And that kind of showed up back in 2019 when he wanted to get his nails painted, and I let him get his nails painted, and then he went to spend the weekend with his father, and his father, like, I don't, to this day, I don't know what he said to him, mm-hmm. but I know that he came and blew up on me, and I had to put him in check. Like, nigga, I'm gonna do what I want with my kids. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some fucking paint on his nails. He will,
that he
like,
wanted.
That he
and
wanted.
He was very excited and happy about.
Exactly. I didn't push him to it. I didn't influence it. He wanted to try it, and I gave him that space to explore that and try it. Like, it does not mean anything about him, but I know whatever his reaction was with, you know, and that conversation was with his father, he probably wouldn't be comfortable telling his dad that, you know, he's romantically attracted to boys as well, because who knows what that conversation would look like. Mm. But don't be doing that to my kid. What's wrong with you?
I have a question, in that realm, because, like, okay, I'm going to make a couple assumptions here. I'm assuming that he's not spending as much time over there because of COVID, right?
Yes.
Okay, because normally it would be like he gets Dave on weekends. So, like, yep. That's a lot of interaction. And so how would you, or how do you plan, if you have a framework for that, to navigate when it's, like, literally conflicting messages? Because it's either, mm-hmm. like, he continues to be homophobic, Dave's dad, or, like, mm-hmm. just shuts up about it. So is it, like you're sending all of these messages about, like, sex positivity and, like what it means to be queer in all these different kinds of ways, and the fact that that's okay and perfectly normal and perfectly natural. What mm-hmm. if his dad comes in and is like, everything your mom says is wrong? Like, what do you even do?
So, unfortunately, because of his dad's reaction so early on, my son has learned to censor himself. Mm. So he will hide what are queer tendencies or these questions. He will not engage or allow, you know, or be himself in that way around his dad. I'm sure there probably still are homophobic messages that he receives there. And I right now I give space for us to talk about it. So anytime he goes to his father's house, I ask, you know, how was it? Mm. What happened? Is there anything that you want to talk about? And I would hope that he, you know, if something did happen of that nature, he would bring it up and we could talk about it. But yeah, I mean, that's all I got in my toolbox right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, you've set a very good precedent of allowing these kinds of conversations to happen and making it such a free and open and transparent space and being like that safe mm-hmm. space for these questions. So I would hope that too.
Yeah. I remember when he came out as bi, he said that, you know, he was thinking about it for a day or so and was scared to tell me. And I was just like, why are you scared to tell me? I create such an open space. But I guess it's just, you know, his experience, one of my friends pointed out that his experiences with his dad may have played a part, or, you know, it's just, I haven't come out to a parent as queer because I'm grown and I gotta tell you what I'm doing. But maybe, you know, there might just be an innate fear of rejection, you know.
It's always just regardless. Like, do you want to talk to your parents about, like, romance and sex, yeah, though? I guess, but, like, more romance for Dave because he's young, but just, like, I'll be like, oh, yeah. Hey, Dad, I'm going on a date. Like, fuck. Like, yeah. Talk about it. Although I guess I was like that with my mom. I don't know. It's kind of like, it's still icky.
Yeah.
Child territory and stuff like that.
So, you know, I was like, yeah. You know, and I asked him, why did he feel a little afraid to tell me? He was like, I don't know, I just did. And I was like, well, you know, kind of reaffirmed, you can tell me anything. We can talk about anything. I guess that just kind of comes with it. That bruised my ego. I thought, I'm doing good parenting. You should be able to tell me anything. And you scared. You thought about this the whole day. But so that just kind of bruised my own ego. But he, you know, he came and told me it was nothing. Yeah. I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, he said he thought about it for a day or so. Like, that's not that. Yeah.
That's not that long. And, you know, and that, you know, that was that. I went back to making my chicken and he walked away. You know,
I love that all these conversations happen in the kitchen. That's like, that's the underlying theme of this, like, episode. Like,
a lot of our conversations, he'll find me in the kitchen, or a lot of our conversations happen around bedtime when we're like both back together and winding down. We'll have some of these conversations. And sometimes in the tub.
Makes sense.
Depending on how that comes up as well, you know. But typically, anywhere he just comes up to me and asks a question. But yeah, I'm always in the kitchen because I be eating.
Do they ever come up during media? I always feel like that's a really good time for teachable moments.
We don't watch a lot of media together because my son is a Zoomer and he only watches YouTube.
Okay.
And his YouTube is BTS. Like, he just watches K-pop videos over and over again and TikTok. So we don't watch a lot of media together for it to come up in that way. Mm-hmm. But I guess, yeah, you know, if we were watching a movie together or something and something came up, I would take that moment to, you know, to educate and stuff as well. But yep, that's it. Thank you guys for listening to me rant.
That was so amazing.
I can't believe I cried. Bitch, don't be crying.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Out of all the people in the podcast community, you and Janicia cry a lot. Also, Rob.
I don't think I've ever cried on this.
No, yeah, podcast. You're not a podcast crier.
Yeah,
but you are a crier.
But I am a crying ass bitch. I'll be crying.
Hey, Akua, here's one good thing in my life.
Yeah. No, literally. Oh Lord, I just be it be too much.
Yeah, but I think that this was an amazing episode, Akua. Thank you very much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Also, Dave, though not present on the podcast, thank you for consenting to have your story shared in these ways. Oh, you guys are so cute, and I'm very proud of both of you.
Thank you.
And this journey that you've taken in parent and childdom. Well, if this episode made you laugh and helps you learn something, or made you feel good, or made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate and love you all so, so much.
If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising Community. That is CUMMUNITY. And you can head over to InahoUprising.com to pay a hoe. If you guys want to follow me on Instagram, which is sometimes abducted by Dave.
There you go.
You can do so at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram. He made me a TikTok and it's literally just one video of him that says I am her son. So you can follow me there on TikTok at Hey Akua Girl. You guys can follow me on Clubhouse at Hey Akua Girl.
Let me get my phone to follow Akua on TikTok. I gotta see that TikTok. That's so funny.
And the funny thing is, he made that TikTok because his TikTok is private because he be in his underwear and no clothes and refuse to put on clothes. And I'm like, you just cannot be naked as a child on the internet because there are creeps out there. So I feel like he coerced me into having my own TikTok so that he could use that as a public forum. And he think he's smarter than me, y'all. And somebody needs to let him know I'm the OG. I know how this goes. But yeah.
That's so funny. You can follow me at SlamRin on Instagram, Twitter, and Clubhouse. I have a TikTok, but I don't know what the ad is. So
you can, I think like a generic one is like user 8,000 million billion trillion whatever, and then you can change it to something that you want it to be.
No, I changed it to something. It's just not SlamRin. I think I didn't want to be found. Akua, this is such a pretty picture of you.
Thank you. I was doing things that day. I don't remember what I was doing, but I was doing things that day.
Okay. Everybody have a great week because you motherfucking deserve to.
Bye.